Happy Father's Day. I already mentioned that. I have a quotation for you about fathers. It goes back to a gentleman you may remember, Dr. James Dobson. Everybody remember Focus on the Family's founder, Dr. James Dobson? He said, if homes are going to survive, it will be because husbands and fathers again place their families at the highest level of their system of priorities. Short and sweet. Husbands and fathers must place their families at the highest level of their system of priorities. And that means ahead of jobs sometimes, ahead of hobbies sometimes, even ahead of gathering among friends sometimes. A good example of that, and another name you probably will recognize, is Jack Nicklaus. Golfer, remember Jack Nicklaus, the golfer? He said, my family has always been number one. Golf has always been number two, and my business third. As long as I kept my family first and kept my priorities there, that's where I wanted them. Had I decided that golf was more of a priority and create more of a legacy, I could have played a lot more years, and I could have probably into my 30s and probably not watched the kids play sports and did not introduce them to the things that really mattered, but I was a dad instead. I thought that was well said. Jack Nicklaus. Happy Father's Day. What I'd like to do now is to look at a book of the Bible. I also need some help. I need some guys to... Bennett, would you do some? Hand these out. And Russell, would you do some, please? This is a fill-in-the-blank. And so I hope you have... pencils or ink pens or something. If not, just have a good memory. This is the lesson that we have been doing for the last, month and a half or so in Sunday school, the first hour here. So some of you poor people are going to hear the same lesson over that we did about a month and a half ago. And there will be a test given, David, at the end to see if you remember what was said, okay? Not really. What I'd like to do is to look at the book of Proverbs. Now, for the next several Sundays, we have divided it up into several different subjects dealing with different matters in Proverbs, but today's lesson is just about the book of Proverbs in general. And I think it's good to point out two or three things to you as we delve into Proverbs in general. And that is that even though I talk about wisdom, and that's what the book of Proverbs is all about, that doesn't mean that I'm the source of wisdom, because I'm not. And in fact, Proverbs even discusses people who think they're wise in their own eyes, and it says that a person who is wise in his own eyes, there's more hope for a fool than for him. So we need to know where the source of wisdom is, and that's in the Bible itself, in our relationship to Jesus Christ in the Bible. God is the source of wisdom. Another thing to point out is that Proverbs are not the same as platitudes. Have you ever pulled up to a McDonald's window and somebody said, have a nice day, and then they had to expand it to have a really nice day, and then a beautiful day, and then they have to have a blessed day, and there's all kinds of different things you can say, but you're as young as you feel is another platitude. It's just something that's said to make you feel good that has absolutely no meaning at all. That's not what a proverb is. A proverb contains wisdom. And a wisdom, as I will say probably more than once today, wisdom is basically knowing what to do with the knowledge you have. If you can organize the knowledge that we see all around us, you'll be a wise person. These are addressed typically to Solomon's sons, because Solomon was the writer of most of this book. But it also applies to daughters and grandsons as well. So this is an overview. It's what we're going to do. We're going to be looking at wisdom in general, but I have to give credit where credit is due. There was a book that I read not too long ago called Living Well by Dr. Alan Mosley. And while I don't organize my thoughts in the same way he did, I use the same book. That's the book of Proverbs. So if you read that book, and I would recommend that you do if you can get a copy of it, Living Well by Dr. Alan Mosley, if you read that, you'll see some of the same thoughts and some that are not the same. So let's start at the very top of the page, and I ask the question, what is a proverb? A proverb is a short, witty, concrete statement that conveys a truth of life. In fact, some smart aleck said it was a paradigmatic statement. That just means it's a really good example. A paradigm is something that's set up as a high standard. It's a concrete statement that conveys a truth of life. John Russell says it's the wisdom of many. This is your first fill in the blank. This is the wisdom of many and the wit of one. Wit of one. So it's something that people kind of know, but maybe didn't put into words. Cervantes, back in the 16th century, said a proverb is a short sentence drawn from long experience. From long experience. That's the next blank. Did everybody get a copy of the thing? If I didn't know how many to print, I hope you got some. I don't have any extra. Sorry. I probably should have printed some more. Examples of proverbs that are not in the Bible are things like a fool and his money are soon parted. You ever heard of that one? My grandparents used to argue over whether that was in the Bible or not. It's not. It would be what's called the blue letter Bible. If you ever looked up on Google, the red letter Bible is where Jesus did the speaking. The blue letter Bible is things that you think ought to be in there but are really not. Like a fool and his money are soon parted. Or a tub stands on its own bottom. That's another one. Here's one from the Poor Richard's Almanac. A contentment makes poor men rich. Discontent makes rich men poor. Hunger never saw bad bread. A man may work from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. You got it. You can fill in the blank. Those are all proverbs, but they're not biblical proverbs. Every culture, to my knowledge, that has ever existed has wisdom sayings, things that appear to be true and many times are true. So if that's the case, and if a lot of truth is in those other cultures, why should we pay any attention to the ones that are given in the book called Proverbs in the middle of the Bible, right after Psalms? Well, glad you asked. We should pay attention to those because, number one, the first question is, who wrote the book of Proverbs? That's Solomon, King Solomon. Second one, where did Solomon's wisdom originate? If you read 1 Kings 3, verses 5 to 15, you'll see that it was a direct request. God said, Solomon, you're going to be king. You're going to have to lead my people. What is it that you want? Solomon said, I don't want any of the other things that the kings have asked for. I want wisdom. I want to know what it is that I should do, how it is that I should organize the people, so I should have wisdom. So Solomon's wisdom originated as a gift from God in response to Solomon's request for wisdom. Okay? That finishes the first quick section of the lesson. The second one is called Principles versus Promises. And I've got to tell you that I lose some people on this one. Proverbs is principles rather than promises. Now, let me give you the difference between the two. What's the difference between a godly principle and God's promises? A godly principle is a generality that is usually true, while a promise from God is a fact that is always true. Proverbs tells the typical consequences of correct and incorrect behavior. Good example. Psalm 90, verse 10. Nobody would think that this is a promise from God because it says, the years of man are 70, or if by reason of strength, 80. And we've had friends just in the last 12 months who have died in their 40s, in their 50s, and we had some that made it to almost 90. So that is a principle. That is a principle. A promise of God would be, come unto me, all you laboring or heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That's a promise. He will always, Matthew 11:28, if you want to make a note of that, Matthew 11:28, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. A principle from Proverbs, I'll give you an example there, and it's written down here, Proverbs 10:3, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but thwarts the cravings of the wicked. That's generally true. God does reward righteousness. But I can give you example after example in which case people who were godly Christians died of hunger in the concentration camps under Nazi Germany. If you look at the nation of Ukraine when the Soviet Union took over, hundreds of thousands of people were starved to death. In North Korea right now, there are Christians who are dying because of persecution against their faith. So the Proverb 10:3, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, is a principle, and that's usually true. But there are cases in which this is not the case, sadly. I had a couple of reminders of the difference between a principle and a promise, or a principle and a law, just this last week. Under the principle side of things, the principle would be, or the proverb would be, a person who crawls under a header on a combine and works in tall grass will get chiggers. Now, that doesn't mean it always has to happen, but in my case, it did. I was crawling under there, working on the thing, trying to get it going, and I came away with a good case of chiggers and still have them. The promise or the law or the axiom, the things that will always be true, are things like this. No two pieces of matter can occupy the same space at the same time. The reason I found out that to be true was because I was driving around what we call the terraced field, and the corner of my header came into the same place as a stump. Both of those pieces of matter could not occupy the same space at the same time, and the header had to be taken off and taken into town to be repaired. That's an axiom. That's a law. When God speaks something as a promise, that's just as true as the law of gravity or the law of two things can't be in the same place at the same time. But these that we're talking about here are things that usually happen. It's the observation of humanity in which Solomon wrote down with the inspiration of God, when these circumstances are present, this is what will usually happen. That's what we're talking about with Proverbs. The first page, Hebrews 3:13-5, God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. That is always true, always true. It will never be false. So what is the repeated theme of the book of Proverbs? Chapter 2, or page 2, as Paul Harvey used to say, Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. God is not human, and we are not God. That's difficult for some people to get through their brains. It's difficult for everyone who has pride in their lives to get through their brains. We're not God. Deuteronomy 29:29, I didn't fill this in, but you can write that down and look it up later if you want to. It basically, if using the farmer paraphrase, Deuteronomy 29:29 says, we don't know everything. God knows everything. He has revealed to us some things. And those some things that he has revealed to us are ours and our children's forever. But there are other things which he knows that we will never know. So let's just get it right. We are creatures. We're not the creator. In fact, that's the next sentence. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. God is the creator. We are creatures. Therefore, the constant idea for us is to gain from Proverbs is our connection of wisdom with a proper relationship to the one true God through Jesus Christ. That's the overview of it. So what word in the Bible is translated wisdom? Now this will be for extra credit for those who would like to get extra credit. The word is chokmah, C-H-O-K-M-A-H. I don't expect you to remember that. I might remember it because I've got it written down in front of me. But as I said, my memory is not as good as it used to be. Chokmah. There are three meanings to the word chokmah, wisdom. One has to do with skill in your work or skill in your talents. When I think of music, within this fellowship anyway, I think of those who perform each Sunday. For John Pettit, for Laura, for Beth, for the Comptons. That's this kind of skill or the kind of wisdom that it's talking about here. Skill in your work. There's, on the farm, the most skilled person I know of is David Taves. He can do anything. He's good at construction. He's good at electricity. He's good at anything he's asked to do. As far as communication goes, I think probably the best communicator I ever heard speak in my life was Ronald Reagan. I don't know if you remember him, or some of you don't even remember him because you're not old enough to remember him, but I remember hearing him speak, and he was an extremely good communicator. So that's the first meaning, skill in your work. The second one is skill with people in our relationship to others. People who can sell ice cubes to an Eskimo is the kind of thing I'm talking about there. And I know a guy who's like that. When he gets through talking, you want to buy whatever he's got to sell. And he's done very well. He's an extremely successful businessman in Christian County and all over Western Kentucky and Tennessee. I don't have that skill. I wish I did. I'd sell you some ice cubes if, like, say, you're going to Alaska. But that's the kind of thing, skill with people, relationship to others. And finally, the third meaning is our relationship to God, the fear or the reverential awe that we owe God. Now, I'm going to get to this in another couple of weeks in Sunday school, but let me tell you, because some of you won't be here. There's two different aspects of fear of God. If you're not a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, you ought to be scared to death of God. Because the same Bible that says God is love in Hebrews chapter 13, I believe it is, says God is a quenching fire or an unquenchable fire. You ought to be scared to death. But once you have become a believer, and if you're part of his family, the kind of fear it's talking about here is reverential awe. To understand that he made everything that we see and so many of the things that we don't see. Radio waves and things that I can't even describe. He is an awful, awesome God. He is the only God. So we have those two ideas of the fear of God. But those three concepts, skill in your work, skill with people, and dealing with God, are the three things that are meant when it says chokma. You have to take it into context to understand what he's talking about. The next verse, Proverbs 3:13-15, say the value of wisdom is immeasurable. Immeasurable. It's greater than gold and silver and precious stones and rubies and all kinds of things. The next line, we read Proverbs because they give God's plan for living well now and forever. Ignoring wisdom is the same as ignoring God. Got a lot of stories to tell, and I have told them, but I'm not going to tell any at this point just because I don't have time. I want to get done on time. I don't want to take too much of it. Wisdom is available to all people, the next subparagraph. Proverbs 1:20 says, wisdom cries aloud in the streets. James 1:5-7 says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all men liberally without reproach. The wisdom principles work for all people. If you put your money in the right place, in the right bank account, or invested in the right place, it doesn't make any difference whether you're a believer or an unbeliever. It will work. If you treat your wife with love, and if you treat your husband with respect, it will work. Your marriage will be a strong marriage. In fact, let me give you an example. I don't think this guy is a believer. His name is Tyler Funderveel. I know that's a funny-sounding name. It's a Dutch name, and the V's are pronounced like F's, and the W's are pronounced like V's, I guess. Funderveel. The quotation from him, and by the way, if it does you any good, he's a Harvard professor of public health. His research showed that over thousands and thousands of women around the world, those who attend church every week, are 5 times less likely to commit suicide than those who don't. So the author of the book, Rebecca McLaughlin, called him and said, is this true? He said, well, actually, it's 5 to 9 times more likely that they will not commit suicide than those who don't go to church. If you go to church every week, then you have a much... In fact, he said, it is one of the strongest deterrents to that kind of death that there is known to man. Now, that's if you can go to church. Someone who is disabled and can't go to church, it's a completely different set of rules. But someone who chooses to never go to church, that's the odds. For men, it's not as great, but it is also strong. In fact, he said that for all deaths of despair, suicide, drug abuse, and alcohol abuse, there's a 68% reduction in those who go to church every week over those who don't. That means if there was 100% reduction, that would be zero. So 68% is a pretty big number. For men, it's 33%. It's not as strong as for women, but it is still strong. This is why I'm saying wisdom is available to everyone, but not all men or women are willing to accept God's wisdom. Stubbornness, self-sufficiency, and sin keep us from God's wisdom. Proverbs 1:32 says, "The complacency of fools destroys them." The sit and the soak and the sour is the attitude of complacent people. Did you know, while we tend to think of Sodom and Gomorrah in terms of their sexual sin, that when they were described at other places in the Bible, it was because of their complacency, just being selfish, never doing anything for anybody, very self-satisfied with their life, complacent. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. Okay, the next paragraph. Wisdom must be searched out. Proverbs 8:17 says, "Those who seek me diligently find me." I did put in one thing that I hear from time to time, and I thought I should at least address it. Down at the bottom of the second page, you'll see it says, what about Proverbs 26:4 and 26:5? Right back to back in the book of Proverbs, it says, "Answer a fool according to his folly," and then the next verse says, "Don't answer a fool according to his folly." Some people point this out as an inconsistency, but it's really not. To answer a fool according to his folly would be like my mom. She was a guidance counselor, high school guidance counselor. And over again, she said people would come in and ask for counsel because they had been caught in some infraction. And she says, "Well, you did wrong, didn't you?" And the guy would say, "I only did wrong because I got caught. There wasn't anything wrong with what I did. I just got caught." That's a foolish statement. Why is it a foolish statement? Because we're always caught. You may not be caught by the principal or by the teacher, but God knows everything that we do and what we don't do. He knows what we say and what we think. We're always caught. So for her to not answer such a foolish statement would have been wrong. It would have either indicated that she was afraid to answer correctly or that she was complicit or in agreement. That's at the top of page 3 if you want to fill in the blank. Silence in such a statement is either fear or agreement. Now, the example I give of not answering a fool according to his folly. Bennett, have you ever watched Andy Griffith? And you know how Andy is the wise guy, the wise person, but there's Barney and then there's Opie. And sometimes Barney and Opie get down to a, "Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't." That's what he's talking about. It's that don't answer a fool according to his folly. Don't get down to the level of a fool if you're answering the question that they might have. Did you get that? No, you didn't. Yeah, you did. That's what it's talking about. So both of those are true. Both of those are true. You know, I have just a short excerpt here, and I can't tell all of it because it's being taped, and I don't really want. One of the best reasons for being on any given board of directors is to be able to say no at the right time when nobody else in the room will say it. Now, my dad was on several boards of directors, and there were times that when he was the only voice in the room who would say, "No, we're not going to do that." And then, sure enough, there would be other people who would fall in line, and they would say, "Yeah, you know, that's true. We really shouldn't do that." So, if you don't answer a foolish idea in a logical, wise way, you're either showing fear or agreement with that with that idea. Living well, the last main point of the lesson this morning, living well requires not only wisdom, but the courage to do what we know is right. The life of Solomon is a good example. He messed up big time when he had 1,000 different women and he tried to please all of them. He knew what was right. He was the wisest man that ever lived. And yet, when it came down to it, he was talked into doing things and to worshiping gods and to pleasing those wives and concubines when he knew better. And he must have been a miserable old man, is all I can think. Because he didn't do what he knew was right, whereas we know that the courage to go along with what we know is right is what's important to get the job done. One last quotation from C.S. Lewis. And I think this is good for every one of us to remember, no matter how old we are or young. It's in red letters at the bottom of the third page. You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending. Now, for some reason, that just struck me. You know you can't go back. You can't start over, but you can start where you are today, and you can change the rest of your life, and so can I. And the best way to do it is to look into God's Word, the Bible, and a good place to start, if you're really looking for wisdom, is the book of Proverbs. I've got just a few minutes. Any questions? Lord, did I leave out anything? Did I feel you don't have a copy? Anybody else? Did I leave out any blanks? Sometimes I do when I'm teaching. I just forget. Okay, no questions? Let's close in prayer. In fact, Al, would you close us out, please? Amen. Thank you all for being here and for paying attention. Mr. and Ms. Reed, you're welcome back anytime, okay?